You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Ryan Wallace. Ryan, thanks so much for being with me today.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Ryan, we're talking about your show, your current show at Susan Englert Gallery. And the title of the show is Leaves Turn Inside You. It's running through March, so I want to talk about this and ask you to begin with a little bit about the title. Leaves Turn Inside You is such a lovely phrase. Really sounds poetic, and I'm just interested in how does that relate to the show for you?
Well, it's a borrowed title from a record by the band Unwound. Mm. And I draw a lot of titling from music often. Not that there's any overt reference, but I think about the tone that a record can create, like as a whole unit that's made up of songs, much like a show is made up of like its own discrete elements. And I just happen to be listening to that record a lot. And with this new body of work, there are these much more organic shapes that I've usually been using, and a lot of people were seeing like nature in it, and while that's not an overt reference, I thought it like matched up with that title. But, like, the tone of the record made sense to me. I happened to be listening to it, it was fresh in my mind, and this thing that people kept seeing and bringing up to me just seemed to line up well.
And it does figure into several titles, right? There's Leaves Turn Inside You, I think 1, 2, 3, and 4. Is that because that's a series, those four?
Yeah, I just tend to like work. The works that develop in series as a whole, and I just kind of title them based on that period of time, really. So rather than make them untitled or give them specific monikers, I usually just number them.
So let's jump into them. There's a painting called Flicker One. That's a 2023 painting, and it's there's different palettes in all of these, which I really like. That one in particular, Flicker One, has an unusually dark background, and yeah, they do look almost, since we're talking about leaves, they look almost floral. Yet there isn't a kind of horizon line or anything, so it's also completely abstract. But as you're saying, people begin to pull forms out of them. Is that what happens when viewers are looking at these?
Yeah, it tends to be, and that's something that I look for in abstraction, that it isn't just kind of for its own sake, that there's something for people to latch onto that you can kind of take internally and go on your own little mental journey with it. Where I come from a background, like I studied illustration, so for years I was making representational images. And then kind of the backgrounds became more interesting to me, but I still like the idea that, not of narrative specifically, but of like a point of reference for people. And abstraction let me kind of keep that open-ended versus pictures that had things in them that you almost felt like you had to decode a story or something, where these are more open-ended. And that's kind of how I wound up there.
I like that, yeah. These.
I very much idea that they like look like they exist in space.
Well, that's what's interesting also in the there's a several called Perfumed Garden, right? Where the series goes to, 9, I believe, or maybe there's more. But in Perfumed Garden, they almost seem like, and this relates to all of them, but it almost seems like there's an element of flight involved, a lack of gravity. The others seem like there's a certain type of grounding, but to talk about Perfumed Garden 9, perhaps, to be specific. Yeah, it feels like there's an element of weightlessness. Is that something that you're thinking of as well, or does that just kind of happen?
It definitely is. Well, both. It's more so years ago, this type of work evolved from looking at photographs of light reflections off of an installation that I did. So the original source, if there is like an image, is of these like really ethereal, flickering light reflections. And over years, I just, all the work is made by like cutting pieces out and seaming them together from the back so that it's one surface to begin with. So I'm left with all of these offcuts that are these shapes that aren't intentional, but they all are rooted in this kind of weird space that didn't have gravity. So it's kind of inherent that it's going to end up there. And then I like them to feel like they're moving through space. Like some people look at them and see them as like an aerial view, or some people think it's like a microscopic view, but I kind of think of them as like you're moving through like an ether or a space. And that doesn't have gravity.
I like that. And tell me a little bit more about this process, because you said there's a lot of cutting here and leftover shapes that are then reintroduced.
Yeah, so kind of it's hard to explain without pictures, but there are some on the gallery viewing room of my studio where everything that you're seeing begins at least as like a cut shape out of canvas. And then I put them all, like I line them all like a puzzle, flip it over, and I tape it together. And then I seal that with fiberglass and gel medium. Then I flip it back, stretch it, and look at it, and usually it doesn't feel finished. So then I go back into it, I paint back into it, I cut back into it, etc. But because of the nature of how they're made, sometimes there will be like a technical problem, like the canvas will appear like too wavy or something won't adhere well. So I'll have to cut things to like address that. And that usually gives me an entirely new shape because I'm dealing with the negative shape of what I had to use to fix the problem. So that's like one thing that generates shapes. And then other things are just after they're stressed and looking at them and kind of the stereotype of like the painter staring at the canvas and making compositional decisions. Like if I put one thing here, it really changes the feeling of the work. So I have to make new shapes to fit what's going on. And that in turn leaves me with a negative space shape that is totally different than what I had before. So it's really like I'm following the lead of them. Like I'm not making like an intentional shape, if that makes sense. Like I'm not like, oh, I want this one to be like, look like a rubber plant. And so I can draw a shape that's that and cut that out. It's really just kind of following them.
That's so interesting. I love that process. So this is a process that's really, it's sculptural in a way. You're working in multiple layers, and the layers themselves are kind of having a dialogue with each other, it sounds like.
Totally. And a lot of, like, they are, I guess, technically collage, but it's one surface. So I kind of think of it almost as like shin collet, where, like, things become one surface that I then act on again. It's totally not shin collet, but that's like that feels closer to me than collage does, where collage is only additive generally.
And speaking of shin collet, do you have a background in printmaking?
A little bit. I did a residency at Robert Blackburn years ago, and I have friends that are master printers, so it's been in my practice. It just hasn't been for a while.
Ah, Robert Blackburn's studio, that's such a legendary kind of place with all kinds of artists that have come through there. And so is that what you were doing?
Yeah.
There? You were doing shin collet there?
Yeah, it was a part of what I was doing for sure.
And
that's where I learned how to do it.
So let's talk about one more It's called Leaves Turn Inside You 4. And this one has, you know, a palette that's like yellows and light greens and also looks like dark reds. And what seems different from the others is there's something like a sunburst in the middle. It seems like an unusual compositional form where there's an oval that seems to be emanating rays. And I don't know if I'm just completely pulling that out of there or that's something you were conscious of, but it feels like, unlike some of the others, like that's really the center of the painting and that there's a kind of almost action happening there.
Yeah, I tend to, because of the nature of how they're made, they can get repetitive. And so once they get to a point where I feel like they're doing what they should be doing, I kind of look for a way out to the next thing. So if they're all starting to be like these blue grays, I'm like, okay, let's make a yellow painting. And so that kind of addresses the palette, and that then leads to other things. And with that shape in particular, they had all been feeling a little bit kind of same size. Like all the shapes on the really large paintings seemed very similar to the relationship of scale in the mid-size paintings. And so I brought those lines in to kind of shift scale. Like I wanted more of like a line quality that had seemed to have been missing, or I wanted to see if it would work, basically. And that actually is intentional. I didn't think too much about what it would look like. It wasn't like I set out to make it look like rays. I just wanted some like smaller scale line. And so I like cut that out and it just kind of seemed to work. And that actually then led to decisions in the other paintings later on. But that's kind of how and why that happened. And that also kind of ties into the overarching kind of time in there is just like, okay, this is happening, this is working. Now it's feeling a little too easy, a little too repetitive. Like, what next? Like, what can make this, like, how can I shift this to something more interesting or at least different and see if it works?
Right. And you're talking about scale here a few times, and that's an interesting word and process in here. So when you're talking about scale, you mean in reference to other objects in here, or is that also about kind of the viewer's sense of scale of these objects when they stand back from it? Because yes, some things do seem larger to me than others, but that may not be what you mean by scale.
I mean, it's both, because I know that that's going to be the result, but at first, I'm really, like, almost looking at these things like a robot and, like, compositional elements, like, scanning them and, like, okay, everything. The relationship of scale within the picture plane is what I'm talking about. But totally right. Knowing that by shifting that, it's going to do something to the viewer's, like, phenomenological response to what they're looking at.
Yeah, that's very interesting and kind of beautiful process. So in these the layers, do you feel that when viewers come up close to it and we can see the layers, the kind of sculptural quality of it, is that also an important part of how the process works for the viewer to you? In other words, like some works, you know, you don't need to get close up to, but that's something I always do, right? I get close to look what's happening. But in these, it feels like when you get close, there's almost a question of what's going on here, a little bit of, you know, wizardry almost to some degree, you know. Is that something you're conscious of that's part of the viewer's experience?
It's a huge part of it, where making things, I mean, it's kind of like a cliche at this point, but like, we're so bombarded with imagery every day that like a painting that needs to be interacted with in person offers something that like just an image does. And now as an artist, like historically there were like barriers of entry to like different outlets. Like, if you wanted to make a movie, you needed, like, tens of thousands of dollars. If you wanted to be a photographer, you needed expertise and equipment that was, there were, like, things that could hold you back from, but now it's, like, you really pretty much have access to anything for, like, not a ton of money. So, like, why make paintings today? And, like, one of the things that they can do that a lot of other things can't do is have an experience that you need to be standing in front of the thing to fully understand it, like, when it's done well, that it isn't just a decorative image or a depiction of a scene, that, like, using these materials, like, when you're standing on the left side of it versus when you're standing on the right side of it, like, with some of those materials that I'm using, like the copper and the aluminum, what's the lightest part of the painting can actually look like the darkest part of the painting, depending on where you're standing. And that, I think, is just rewarding as a viewer, like, at first glance, sure, but also, like, if you're living with these things, like, they kind of offer you something new from day to day, depending on the lighting in your house, depending on the time of year. And those are all things that I just, like, find interesting in other people's work and things that we live with. So it's a huge part of it, like materials and how they're handled. And
yeah, that's so interesting, because now that you say that, this work almost looks like, and the palettes, and that may not be how you intended it, but they look like different seasons almost, like a seasonal palette is. I mean, you just mentioned that briefly when people come back to them at different times, or there's different, when there's different light. But yeah, it feels to me, and I don't know if that's part of your thinking, but yeah, that these are like we'd see different palettes of flowers or different palettes in the colors of trees. I mean, is that a reach, or is there a seasonal analogy here?
It's not a reach. But it's not a authored intention, for sure. But, like, some of the palettes come from, like, that. There's a few that are kind of, like, almost burgundy and white, and that whenever I'm, like, riding a chairlift and, like, a blizzard and snowboarding, it kind of, the trees get discovered, and you see, like, little bits of color poking through. And when I'm surfing in the summer, it's very bright. So that's all, I think it's certainly not intentional, but it's all in there.
But it is a relationship with nature, then. It is a relationship. Right, and that's a natural source where they're coming from. Meaning, like, you know, flora and fauna, so to speak.
The flora and fauna is honestly completely accidental. But I know that that's going to be seen. I just, not that I don't care, but it's unusual to me that they look how they do after years of making things and just kind of following it where it leads. Like, I never thought that it would look like this. That's, like, just as interesting to me that they look how they do as anyone else, I guess.
Like,
and in
that,
terms
yeah,
of, like, the relationship to nature, that's, like, a big part of my life just as a person, but it's definitely not, like, something I'm trying to capture in the work. I think it all just, it's really a result of just working and kind of letting things go where they go, and I think that's just because of who I am and my experiences, they're going to come out how they are.
Right,
it's,
yeah.
It's a strange thing. Like, I almost feel detached from it, but it's so personal.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And I like that surprise element of where things often end up. It's been great talking to you about all of this. There's links here so listeners can, of course, hopefully come see the show. And I want to ask you one more question before we go a little off topic. What are you reading at the moment?
Lately, the thing I've been reading is my son's in high school, and he's reading Hamlet, so I've been reading a little bit of Hamlet.
Well, thank you for that. I like that. Yeah, reading along with your son is a great thing to do. Ryan, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today. I wish you well with this beautiful, beautiful show, and thank you again for talking with me.
Yeah, thank you. It's really fun.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.